Welcome to Discovery 2, Lecture 9. Lecture 9. Okay, only one more lecture to go, which is just one little review lecture where we go and recap everything. And then I've finished all the lectures, and then you guys get to slog it through all the labs. Just an announcement that we are going to set you some CCNA2 labs to do. Because I don't think the Discovery Labs are any good. So we're going to pick out a selection of the CCNA2 labs. Yeah, that's what I thought. Pick out some things from CCNA2 and you get to do some more labs. And
oh, good, I've just seen you the ones from last year.
Now, no raising fun.
Naughty boy.
No raising money for yourself by selling off last year's answers to the current students, Mr. Adams.
Now yeah, there's an idea.
Enterprising.
Yeah,
great idea.
Yeah. Yeah, enterprising young man.
Well, you said you wanted some extra money, didn't you, Dee?
Yeah, we could put it towards a,
You buy VictorStream.
Yeah, I got news for you. Unfortunately, most of our students wouldn't be able to pay the incredibly high price you'd be asking for last year's answers, so maybe not such a good idea.
No, there you go.
I can sort you out with some sweet donut deals.
I think they'd be starved by the time they got here.
Well, your answers are okay. Year old.
They'd yes, probably still be valid, though.
That's correct, though. I could
yeah, that's right, I marked them.
The incorrect beginning of the labs before I corrected them all.
Yeah, that'd be about right. Okay, let's get on to today's lecture, which is always a good thing to do. Now, up to this point, did anybody get my messages regarding how to configure DHCP under Fedora that I posted yesterday, which all looks a bit complicated?
Yes, I did.
I have no idea whether that'll work on the workstations on the bundle, so we'll get somebody to try that, and then if it doesn't, I'll convert them over to Fedora over to Ubuntu.
I think overall that would be easier for the future too, apparently. A bit too confusing for some.
Look, I mean, it sort of depends on what sort of grief you want, to be honest, because I mean, Fedora has its idiosyncrasies and so does Ubuntu. But we were thinking of converting them over to 8.04.1 LTS. Ubuntu LTS even. My old OVOX just dropped out. Alrighty.
All those different network interface things are easier to get to in Ubuntu.
Ah. There we go. I thought that was Enable dropping off there, but it was Chris.
I'm shaped, so I'm not sure how reliable my internet's going to be this today.
As long as everybody else shuts their Skype and stuff down, you should be all right. This only uses 1,920 bytes per second. Oh, righty. Now, well, let's get on to talking about today's subject material, which is troubleshooting. And the good news is I know how to troubleshoot, and the bad news is I haven't actually read the chapter, so there you go. I've read bits of the chapter, so we'll just talk about some troubleshooty bits. And anything I miss out, we can talk about next week. I'll turn this AutoVox off, it's annoying. We'll set the sensitivity down, because it's not triggering very...
Terry?
Yeah?
I did go through the notes myself extensively last night, and it's just mainly... troubleshooting and talks about the different layers of the OSI reference model and the fault finding at the different levels.
Well, this is what I'm saying. I don't think it's the end of the world. I have read through a fair bit of it, and I know how to troubleshoot, and I know what they're going to talk about, so I don't think we'll have too much of a problem. Okay, first of all, the chapter starts off by telling you that people who have CCNA certifications and CCNA qualifications are very highly sought after by employers, which is what we've been saying all year, and that the employers get measurable benefits from their CCNA graduates because their CCNA graduates can fix stuff and do stuff. And people who do networking, those who can troubleshoot, are extremely highly sought after. And if you walk in here on a Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday morning, you'll often hear somebody going, "Kerry, can you fix my insert electronic device that has gone on the fritz? And whereupon I troubleshoot them. Or just shoot them, exactly. Well, I always used to have this image of, like, troubleshooting being this bloke, like, you know, this trouble thing would be running along the flat and somebody would just blow it away with a shotgun or something. You know, the problem's been troubleshot. It was all a bit sort of graphic, actually. But anyway, so troubleshooting, what do you do? You know, and so, I mean, that all makes a bit of sense. I don't think I need to explain that. People who can fix things are very popular. I had a friend, Andrew, who, when asked what his job description was, said, "My job description is to fix things. When it breaks, it becomes my problem. When I fix it, it stops being my problem." And that's how he described his job.
Good description.
Yeah, I thought so. And that's why they have that little thing in all the contracts, such as other duties as required, to make you do all the other things that, you know, you supposedly have to do and troubleshoot and fix and all that sort of things. Anyway, so essentially what this chapter starts off by saying is that, you know, if you want to do the CCENT thing, which is the thing you can do at the end of Discovery 1 and 2, which is the, oh yes, it's the Cisco Certified Entry Level Network Technician. Oh, there we go, something like that. And you can do that, and you can actually get a qualification after doing Discovery 1 and 2. And I think because you're involved in this program, you actually get a discount. I don't know what the discount's like, but you do actually get a yeah, you end up getting half price or something.
Cool.
Okay, and there we go. Chris has signed back into MSN again now. Okay, so when you are troubleshooting, we need to know about the OSI reference model. All right, let's see how much you guys remember. What is layer one of the OSI reference model?
Let's get
physical.
Thank you, Chris.
Physical.
Dean's coming from the other end.
Yeah, sorry, going back the other way.
Okay, so what's layer five of the OSI reference model?
Session.
It is, it's session. And layer seven is application. We all remember that stuff I went on and on and on about. Please do not throw sausage pizza
sausage
away.
Sausage pizza away. All people seem to need.
Data processing, yes. There was a really good one that Corey came up with that I'll have to dig out of my mail, but I'll send that to selected people off lecture. But that was certainly another way of remembering it. Now, very important that you know what happens at the various levels. At what level of the OSI reference model does a hub operate?
Well, the physical one.
Yeah, that's right. What about a switch?
Layer 2.
Yes, Eddie's in with a 2. Yep, the data link layer and a router.
3.
Three network.
Yeah, well, the notes actually say 3 and 4 now because we're doing NAT level stuff. So a NAT router actually operates at 3 and 4, but essentially 3. Okay, so and what they do is that you use the OSI reference model to as a framework for your troubleshooting endeavors, and you sort of go there and you walk in and go, oh, it looks like it's a problem with the application layer. And then that makes you look really impressive until you find out that it's not the application layer at all, and then you look like a complete idiot unless you manage to solve the problem. But the reason we use the OSI reference model is it gives everybody a common framework to work from, and you can then talk about the layers of the network in such a way that people will understand what the part of the network you are talking about. Layered method models are used to separate the network into logical divisions of functionality. And that's how you can compare network protocols and also do troubleshooting. Anybody tell me what the other model that in common usage is apart from the OSI reference model?
The TCP/IP model.
Yeah, that is correct. Okay. Now, there are a number of methods of troubleshooting. One is top-down. One is bottom-up. And the other is divide and conquer. Okay, so bottom-up is where you end up headfirst in the garbage bin. No, it's not. It's where you start at the physical layer, work your way up, data link, network, transport, session, presentation, application. And would you believe it, top-down's where you work your way the other way down. application, presentation, session, transport, network, data link, and physical. Okay, so you... Rule one of troubleshooting, as far as I'm concerned, is... Can anybody tell me what layer one of troubleshooting is? Let's have a guess. What's the rule one of troubleshooting? The first thing you should do.
Check the simple things first.
Kerry!
Yeah. Ah, yeah, if you happen to be at association, yell for Kerry.
Well, gather there.
No, I have got troubleshooting down to such a fine art that I just walk into one of the lecture rooms and the computers start working. It must be my get working aura.
Hey, Kerry, I'll just share this with you. You should do what Ray has done. He's decided that he's named the dog Calico Ray now. So every time I want a query from him, the dog gets called. There you go.
Well, there you go.
Well, you can always use TKG's method. Just turn everything off and back on again. That fixes everything, according to me.
Well, surprisingly enough... Okay, so we look at the simple things first.
Reminds me of the cat that got renamed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I seem to recall that too.
That's a troubleshooting step... Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
It's a troubleshooting step that I'm sure Kerry is about to agree with me that it's a good step because you always try the simplest things first. Unfortunately, pitted or weighted against that, it's also a way of getting people off the phone. Certain larger telcos than what you're on, Dean, will often use, oh, we'll reset your passwords for you as a troubleshooting step, and then it creates even more problems because no one knows what the password should be.
The other one thing I have trouble explaining to people, and we'll sort of get into the discussion section a bit later, but trying to explain to them that the password on the router is not necessarily the same as their internet password, but we'll get back to that later. Okay, check out the simple things. Okay, if you're troubleshooting from the top down, make sure they've got the right application open. Make sure they're running the right program. Make sure they're pressing the right keys. In other words, starting at the application layer. If you're going from the bottom up, is the power cord plugged in? Did they turn the PowerPoint on? I have had a couple of instances where the troubleshooting problem has actually been the problem has actually been between the chair and the keyboard. In other words, it's the user. In fact, we had an incident probably about 7 years ago now. The eighth layer, the Bogon layer, yes. A few years ago, somebody, no names mentioned, was trying to create a shortcut to Zoom text on their computer.
Oh, not this one.
And this particular person, and I won't say who it was in the properties dialog of the shortcut, and I said, press Z. And she said, it's not working. And I said, what are you pressing? She said, I'm pressing Control-Alt-Z. I said, press Z. It's not working. Press Z. What the hell do you want me to do? Press Z. Oh, that worked.
When you're in the right field.
Oh, look, you know, it happens to anyone, but that was just a particular instance where you had to make sure the user was actually following the instructions. And this is one of the things you'll often find is when you... and there are two rules to sales. Well, there's two rules that work in conflicting ways. If you're a salesman, the customer is always right. And if you're a computer technician, the customer is always wrong. Now, you have to come up with a medium between these two things because sometimes not all of the customers are wrong and not all of the customers are right. So half the battle is actually figuring out what is truth and what is not.
If you're a computer salesman, the customer's wrong, but you just pretend they're right anyway.
That's exactly right. And there's no point getting into an argument about it. You just go, oh, yes, sir, that's good, sir. Okay, whatever you say. I mean, the difference between a used car salesman and a computer technician is that the used car salesman knows when he's lying. Okay, so, now, top-down approach, good for solving application layer problems, things like, my web browser isn't working and stuff like that. Bottom-up, you're solving your physical problems, things like, you know, connectivity issues and stuff. If you are an experienced troubleshooter, you actually do what we call divide and conquer, which is where you work, you start at the centre of the OSI reference model, say around the network layer or the transport layer, and one of you, well, if there's a couple of you, one of you works up the layers and the other one works down the layers. And one of the things that Gemma and I do is we both work on different aspects of a problem. So if we're troubleshooting something, she'll go and check the lights and the cables and whatever else while I'm off checking, you know, application layer connectivity and sort of, you know, transport layer stuff. That... Woof.
You are there.
Okay, well, I think we're back. So that was a 12:23 dropout this time, not a 12:40. No, it's okay. We're moving on. You can hear me, can't you? Yeah. Can you guys hear me?
Certainly can.
We can.
Yeah.
Yep. You're up.
Yeah. Righto. All right. Yeah. Geraldine's not on, but that's okay. We won't have to hear the good afternoon song. She'll resolve that in just a few moments.
What? She'll resolve the good afternoon song.
Yeah, well, that'll take the router out if anything does, I tell you. Okay, so if you're dividing and... Well, I was talking about... where did I get up to? I was talking about dividing and conquering. So Gemma will often check all the physical things, like the wires and lights and stuff, and I will work on the application-level troubleshooting, which will mean that you can... that way we can then meet in the middle, so to speak, and figure out what the problem is by, you know, she can say, well, the lights are working and this is happening, and I can say, well, this is happening and this is happening, and then we swap our various troubleshooting things. Yes.
Is there any tools available to us that can detect light or colours of light?
There are, actually.
There are. There is one that you can get from Mr. Taylor, who will never ever build you one this millennium, and it's a light probe that can actually detect the difference in brightnesses of lights and things. But getting him to actually build one, I've been trying for the past 7 years, and he still hasn't built me one.
Get down that window.
Maybe he's just invited me over tonight. Maybe I should go. Telling me back at 4 o'clock, so I'm only coming if you build Dean and carry a light probe.
You're telling you, like, 35 of them.
I think the other thing you've got to keep in mind, though, Dean, is that there are actually devices that can sort of detect that to a large degree, but to be honest, sometimes even sighted people have trouble viewing the lights, so good luck an electronic device viewing them a lot of the time as well, because they're not very difficult, easy to see.
You know, I'm just curious.
Especially when they put the lights on the same side as... the same side as all the ports.
My netcom looks really good lit up at night.
Yeah, so you can get devices that will help you with the lights and stuff. Generally what I would recommend, though, Dean, is that use the tools at your disposal to see whether the lights are on or not. So, for example, if you're working with a router and you want to know whether the router is on or not, wave an AM radio near it. That's probably going to be cheaper than a light probe. In fact, there's a really good model from JCar. We like them a lot. I use mine to troubleshoot all sorts of things. In fact, it very rarely plays the radio. It usually sits on the bench going... troubleshooting things. So, and that was a $15 investment and quite one of the more useful troubleshooting tools I've ever purchased.
Sorry, what was that again, Kerry?
An AM radio.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, because it's like air radio frequencies from the wireless thing you watch it.
Well, also from any computers and stuff. If you put a radio near a computer, you can actually hear the interference patterns, and the interference patterns change depending on what you're doing on the computer, so you can tell whether the computer's locked up or not.
Oh, okay. You know, I was interested in the other day when we had that network outage because of that corroded... cabling on the poles out the front. The amount of noise that was in the line was horrendous. Nothing would have connected.
Well, this is certainly the case. Lights are obviously a good thing, and there are certainly times when you need to be able to look at the lights. You can work around it a lot, however. For example, if you plug a cable from your computer into a router and the router is turned on, you should get a message that says local area connection is connected, speed 100 megabits per second, and that will tell you whether you've got a link between you and your router.
Yeah, no, it's those sort of things are common sense. Well, they should be anyway.
Don't assume that the average computer technician in 2008 has common sense, Dean. I have been sadly mistaken by making that assumption.
No, I just got no, don't count on my head then.
Okay, so, and this is probably important. One of the very important things you will do in troubleshooting is use your common sense, or develop it if you don't have it. Because when you're solving a problem, some people run around all over the place and just start doing random things to see if they fix the problem. Oh, maybe if I cross-connect the pairs in the plug, that'll fix it, or you know, so you've really got to take a methodical... Yeah, reverse the polarity and wiggle its tail if you're in Doctor Who land, or configure the deflector grid to emit a tachyon burst if you're watching Star Trek. Okay? That's neither of those things...
Lieutenant Commander Data theory.
Yeah, something like that. But the reality is you really need to have a structured approach to troubleshooting, and you need to be able to follow these things through in a particular methodology. Now, if you work for a certain... if you work on Level 1 Help Desk, you actually have a script that you follow. And you read the script, and about every three lines it says, have you tried turning it on and turning it off and turning it on again? But the script is actually followed by all of the callers, and all they have to do is read the script and follow the instructions. And depending on what the user says or does, they go to different points in the script. And that is essentially the job of Level 1 Help Desk. Now, they're telling me that it's very difficult to troubleshoot a network without a network diagram. Well, yeah, maybe. I mean, if it's a complex network and you're sighted, definitely go for the network diagram. I've been working in networks for 13 years now, and I can't say a network diagram's ever done me any good. However, if you do have a complex network diagram and you need a network and you need somebody to explain to you what's hooked up where, a diagram would be useful, and you should be keeping network diagrams for documentation purposes anyway. That's certainly... That's why they mention them. Oh, I knew I shouldn't have had that large curry before lecture, but yeah, it was nice. Okay, so physical network topology. Anybody tell me what a physical network topology is?
Actual way out of the cabling.
Yeah, and the network devices. Oh, just to answer your question, actually, Gemma, because you brought it up earlier, do you know why they put the lights on the same side as the ports?
Because if you're looking at it in a rack or something, you can actually see what's working as well as being able to access the cables at the same time.
That's exactly right. Then you run the power cables out the back, which you usually don't want to mess with, and then all the lights and ports are at the front. So not particularly good for low vision people that want to get in with a magnifier, but quite good for sighted people who can actually have all the lights and the cables on the same side.
I just actually find it hard to see through the cable octopus.
Okay, welcome to Discovery 2, Module 9, Part 2. Okay, we're back and we're recording. Gemma's saying you have trouble seeing through the cable octopus with the lights on the same side as the switch, which probably has something to say about the way I tend to run cables. I don't run them in a very sighted-friendly manner. But there you go. Okay, and I asked a question which was the physical. So what is the logical network topology then, if the physical one is where all the devices are sitting and stuff? Anybody?
Sorry, that's the question, Kerry.
What's the logical layout of the network?
Yeah, what sort of things do you show on a logical network topology?
Network segments.
Yeah, descriptions, data flows, yeah, other things. IP addresses and subnet masks. Interface identifiers. Routing protocols, static and default routes. And stuff like that.
Yeah, they're all good things.
Yeah, well, they are, but they're... They're what you put in a logical network topology. And speeds, yeah. Speed kills, but network speeds are good. The faster the network speed, the better. Actually, we were discussing the other day, actually. Gemma was copying an ISO image down onto her mini note, and she was bemoaning the fact that I'd actually locked one of the switch ports to 100 megabit with the expression, gee, you forget how used to gigabit you get, because copying 600 megs at 100 megabit takes a while. So who's got gigabit? Yes, actually, Mr. Legg's got gigabit, and we've got gigabit. Has anybody else got gigabit?
That's another good troubleshooting thing for blind is if you get a manageable switch, you can see the status of the ports through the web interface.
Yes, you can. And in fact, I would strongly recommend the Linksys range of gigabit switches. I think they're about $130 from Oz Technologies, I think I've found them. And you jump into the web interface and you actually see what state the... you've always got to have one connection working to the switch, obviously, because you don't have a console port. You actually can look at the status of the network ports, what speed they're running at, whether the links are up or down. Okay, and you can get all sorts of tools to help you. For example, Cisco Works. Of course, I've got to mention that because it's a Cisco course. And there are also utilities such as TCP Dump. And you can draw network diagrams, and you can draw network diagrams for things like Visio and various other utilities. And there are utilities for SNMP and stuff that can grab information out of the SNMP databases and things. So, yeah, that's also useful. And you can actually get some things called Network Management Tools, or NMS. And, in fact, there's a free network management system, which is called JFF-NMS, which stands for Just for Fun Network Management System. And provided you can get MySQL up and cranking, which is not that difficult, but it does require a little bit of perseverance, you can actually get JFF-NMS to work, and you can have those pictures that will actually show you in green, yellow, and red what devices and things are functioning on your network and what aren't functioning. And apparently those charts are fairly accessible with JAWS and stuff as well. But for a sighted person, the colours is a good overview. You can look at a screen and go, oh, the main ISP router's just gone red, so we've got no internet. And often it'll tell you that before the secretary comes busting into your office going, I can't get onto Facebook. Yeah, so... that's all good, and that's certainly a worthwhile thing to be doing. Network management systems can be quite expensive. You can spend thousands and thousands of dollars on them, but there are some open source alternatives. As I said, there's Nagios, which is a network intrusion detection system, and there's also another one called Munin. That's right, Munin, M-U-N-I-N, which is some Norse messenger thing. And it's another set of utilities that you can install Munin node and the Munin server and stuff on Linux. And there are clients for Munin and stuff for Windows, so they can all exchange information and see what's working and what's not. The reason you would use all this stuff is because as the complexity of your network grows and you get more devices and things, it's very difficult to see what's failed at a glance. You end up having to run around trying to figure out exactly which device is broken and which device is not working. If you're only at home and you've only got six PCs and a router and some wireless, it's not that difficult to troubleshoot, generally speaking. So they've got Cisco View, HP OpenView, SolarWinds, and WhatsApp Gold. They're the examples of network management systems they've got in the notes, but they're all commercial, and I doubt many of our students could afford any of those, so I think we go with the free ones. Okay, knowledge bases. Anybody tell me what a knowledge base is?
It's a collection of troubleshooting tools from previous error messages. Is that correct?
Well, more specifically, it's an online repository of information that is relevant to a specific product or products. Can anybody tell me what step one of troubleshooting an error message in Microsoft Windows is if you've got a working internet connection on a computer somewhere?
Place the error message into the docs.
Into the search field, yeah. Yeah. And that's what most people do initially. And you'll find that under, you know, KB904608, Dean broke the computer. No, there isn't an article called that at all. But, for example, it will tell you what could possibly be causing the error message and whether there is a hot fix or preventative or action that you should be taking to stop that from happening in future. And I actually saw one that was sort of having a shot at somebody who'd installed some sorts of... Oh, sorry, it was a knowledge base article in Microsoft complaining that if you had... Norton Go Back installed or whatever, it would slow your computer up incredibly if you were doing certain things. So it's interesting, they often tell you about third-party incompatibilities that you otherwise might not know about.
And you can't use the recovery console.
But Microsoft is not the only one who has a vendor knowledge base. And just as an interesting case in point, we actually had to use the VMware knowledge base last year to troubleshoot the problem with the virtual machines where you try to create another user and then it won't let you log in as the user you just created.
Which is interesting because you'd expect to go to the Microsoft one for that.
Well, that will tell you that it's a problem with terminal services, but it won't give you the root cause. Okay, so yeah, we and as people may remember, we posted that up to the list last week. There's the URL for you to actually go in and fix that problem if you have it. And there's also, you know, if you have trouble creating users on your Windows 2000 machine. Okay, protocol analyzers. They will actually show you traffic that is traveling to and from the various devices. And they will actually show you the what's in the packets and what is going on. And one of the good free protocol analyzers, it used to be called Ethereal, except I think somebody else had the trademark on that name, or Etherreal, depending on who you spoke to. So now it's called Wireshark. Okay, so essentially, that's all pretty cool. The other thing that is worth mentioning is debugging output is really useful. Dean and I have independently discovered that if you have a billion router and behind your billion router you have an ATA such as a Sapura 3000 or similar, the billion has a nasty habit in certain firmware versions of dropping all incoming packets on port 5060.
Yes, you just change it to port 5070, but you've got to change it also in the device as well.
Yeah, that's right, because it eats the SIP traffic by default.
Yes. I don't know why Billion did that. Very strange. Anyway.
It's because it's actually a common... It's a common firmware architecture, and in fact the models that are above that in the router family actually do have SIP processing in them, and they obviously forgot to stop the lower end ones from listening on that socket.
Yeah, but it's funny, engines level 2 and 3 technicians knew about it, but their level 1s didn't, which I found quite odd.
Yeah, but it's because the level 2 and 3 have got more experience and generally more knowledge and have been around a bit more than, say, the level 1s, I think.
But you think they'd pass it down into their knowledge base, wouldn't you?
Oh, they'll probably get into it. I remember tracking it down year before last when I first put my Sapura in and I was trying to do direct IP dialing and nothing I could do would actually allow the calls to come into the PABX because I had an asterisk PBX set up and I actually discovered that the SIP messages weren't even coming in. Okay, there are hardware tools such as cable testers, multimeters, and network analyzers. Now, cable testers, there's a cable testing lab you can listen to up on the website where we use a cable tester to test cables. Multimeter, there's actually, it'll test voltages and capacitance and ohms and continuity or whether there's a circuit or not. And they're also quite useful for testing things. Now, the other thing, a time domain reflectometer, that can actually tell you whether there's a break in a cable and how far away the break is, and they also have more advanced tests in them. Now, the other thing I wanted to mention, and I will be announcing this on the mailing list as well, in 2008 Thursday Chats folder, we have actually put up a re-edited version of last year's Linux Instruction Workshop, and it's had all the silence taken out of it, which has taken it down from an hour 55 down to about an hour 29, so people might want to listen to that if they're having trouble with Linux on ITE2.
Thank you.
Has anybody ever noticed that if you pull up Chapter 9 in the chapter view, JAWS goes like a dog on downers? Alrighty. And also, if you go and change from chapter view to section view, it has to re-download all the different components again, which is always a bit of a pain. Okay, look, there's a lot of stuff in this this chapter, but essentially, and it goes through in exhausting detail as how to troubleshoot all the different layers and what you're looking for and whether you're looking for lights and that sort of thing and looking in ARP tables and stuff like that for layer 1 and 2. I think what I'm actually going to do is let people read through the notes when they get up to it, because most people aren't, and we'll answer questions as they come up. Is there anything else people think I should really cover about troubleshooting? I think we've sort of done a good overview to get people started, and the notes will probably fill in the rest.
Pretty much right there, Kerry. The notes do cover things extensively, which is quite good, instead of the vagueness like the other modules.
Yeah, exactly. Alright. Well, I think that's... Anybody got any questions or whatever before we wrap up the lecture?